And news has reached us of the death of the former Ulster Unionist Party leader, James Molyneux, who's died at the age of 94. His political career spanned more than three decades. And I'm joined on the phone now by the Ulster Unionist Party leader, Mike Nesbitt. Mike, a very, very good morning to you.
Good morning, Pamela. A sad day. It is a sad day because although he has had a long life and a life well lived, it is still extremely sad to hear that the day has come when he's no longer with us. He was a towering figure, you know, right through some of the most difficult days that Northern Ireland has ever seen. And he's a man that this party, the Ulster Unionist Party, owes an enormous debt of gratitude to. He came into the leadership in 1979. And he sat as leader for 16 years. And to give that some context, Pamela, in the 16 years previous to him being elected leader, we had no fewer than four others: Terence O'Neill, James Chichester Clark, Brian Faulkner, and Harry West. So there was a clear and demonstrable instability at the head of the Unionist Party before Jim took over. And one of his abiding gifts to us was to give us the stability and the confidence to move forward.
But as a man as well, he was a formidable figure as well, having been one of the first troops to enter the newly liberated Belsen concentration camp.
And I think that is an experience which guided him for the rest of his life. Certainly, yes, he was one of the first allies to enter Bergen-Belsen. And what he saw was one of the most graphic examples of man's capacity for inhumanity to his fellow man. And how could that not affect your values as you go forward? And Jim was, if nothing else, a man of very solid values. As he said himself, he was never one for the High Wire Act. Many people will remember the many media appearances that he put in alongside the DUP leader Ian Paisley. And Dr. Paisley was certainly the dominant figure in terms of the media, but Jim was the quiet thinker in the background. He is a man who had fantastic political guile. He played chess, political chess. He realised that, you know, you can make a move and you can make a headline, but that doesn't necessarily get you anywhere. What Jim was into was understanding that if he moved here, somebody else would move there, and looking ahead to the third, fourth, fifth and final movement that would bring success.
But he was respected across the community. It wasn't just with the Unionist Party as well.
Because he was a man of solid values, a man who understood humanity, had seen it at its worst, as you say, at Bergen-Belsen, and whose interest was a stable Northern Ireland with healthy, prosperous people, no matter what their background. And of course, his own background was humble. He was brought up on a farm. He then joined the armed services and fought in the Second World War, and coming straight out of the war, joined the Ulster Unionist Party. So he had a very solid life indeed.
Well, Mike, we appreciate you coming on today and discussing the former leader, and thank you very much indeed for taking the time to pay tribute to him.
You're welcome. Thanks, Pamela.
Thank you very much indeed, the UUP leader, Mike Nesbitt. I'm joined now in the studio by our political correspondent, Ken Reid. Ken, very good morning to you.
Good
morning, Paul. A sad day. You knew Jim Molyneux well.
Very well. I travelled a lot with him over the years, back and forward to Westminster. I mean, he was delightful company. He was full of stories. He had a very interesting background in the RAF. And, of course, he was one of the first troops to arrive at Belsen, at the concentration camp. And he would tell me that had a tremendous effect on him. Yeah, he was a quiet man. He was certainly somebody who didn't believe saying something like devolution. He believed really that, you know, the union should be integrated, and he wasn't happy. He could see the move towards devolution, particularly in the 90s. And the Ulster Unionist Party in the 70s was really turbulent. You know, they had four leaders. And then 1979, Jim took over as leader, and he was there to 95. And that was quite an achievement, because we all remember those Ulster Unionist Council meetings and the turmoil that was going on. And I suppose I'll also remember Jim feeling at the time of the IRA ceasefire in 94, he felt out of the loop. You know, he felt he had been double-crossed by the British government, and he was uncomfortable, as he was in 1985, the time of the Anglo-Irish Agreement. But, you know, over at Westminster, you could see Jim, that's where Jim's real home was. Even so many years in the House of Commons and then in the House of Lords, he was very popular for even in his later years, he was always very fit. You know, I remember interviewing him and he would jump over the wall to get over to Abington Green. I couldn't do that, you know, and he was he was quite a character and he had a wicked sense of humour. There's no doubt about it, but very likeable.
What was his relationship with Westminster like, with the government in power at the time? As you say, it was turbulent in the Anglo-Irish Agreement and later on.
Well, Jim felt he had built up a very close link to the Conservative Party. And in 1985, the Anglo-Irish Agreement, he assured the Ulster Unionists Council that, you know, this wasn't going to happen. And then it was quite a shock to him. And then, of course, we had that turbulence afterwards where, you know, I suppose the Ulster Unionists and the DUP excluded themselves from contact with government ministers. And he felt, I don't want to go as far as double-crossed by Margaret Thatcher, but he certainly felt very let down. He knew the system at Westminster. I mean, he introduced me to all the different places in, how to go to canteens, whatever. He knew the place inside out. He was a difficult man to interview because, you know, he was so quiet and he didn't like giving anything away. Anne Purdy, my old colleague, unfortunately, who's now deceased, in the newsletter, she wrote a book. It was, you know, and really the thrust of that book was that he always took the longer view, that politics was a long game. And, you know, when you hear that from many, Peter Robinson, I think, would subscribe to something the same. And I suppose the other interest was his relationship with Ian Paisley because they were of a certain generation. Jim was older than Ian Paisley, but, you know, privately they got on very well, even though Ian Paisley had said some awful things about Jim at the time. You know, you would meet them on the last flight back from London at that time when all the negotiations, you know, all the main action was in London, and they got on very well. They would sit and laugh and so forth. So, Jim was quite a character.
Well, Mike described him there as being a political chess player, that he knew how to, if you moved that person up there, then somebody else could take the place in there, and so the board would continue until you got there.
Yeah, it was great. And he particularly, I go back to Westminster because Westminster dominated his life and he knew how Westminster worked. But of course, Westminster's full of devious people as well.
Really?
Yeah. And I think at times, Jim was disappointed, but he always fought back. He realised that the Ulster Unionists, the Unionist parties, were actually in quite a strong position at times. Particularly, you know, the major government was rocky in the 90s, and he played that card on a number of occasions. But as I say, I think his two main disappointments would have been the Anglo-Irish Agreement and the fact that he was kept out of the loop in the negotiations on the IRA ceasefire.
One other thing that I was saying to Mike there, that while he was at the helm of the Ulster Unionist Party for 16 years, he still had the respect of all communities.
Oh, yes. He was certainly non-sectarian. John Hume, the SDLP, people would have known him very, very well at that time. I don't think Jim would have ever had much contact with Sinn Féin because that wasn't the political game until the 90s. But in terms of nationalist politicians, John Hume, Seamus Malnoch, yes, he had a very good working relationship. And I suppose that was reflected, you know, you would see people night by night, you know, as they say in this, cutting the tripe out of each other on television. But privately, they actually realised they were in a profession and getting on with things. And Jim was, I suppose, deep down, a very moderate, you know, really believed in unionism, quite a religious man in a way. And he did with those who say the policemen who guard him. There was a lot of loyalty because people felt he was just a good man.
A good man, and when he moved up to the House of Lords, was he still as influential, and was he able to get the politics and his views across as much in the Lords?
I don't think you can be as influential in the House of Lords, but he loved it. You know, he was still involved. He's what I would call a technocrat politician. He loved the cut and thrust of committees and debates. He liked following legislation. And that's where Jim was happiest, there's no doubt about it, you know. And Jim wouldn't have been a drinker in any sense, but he loved a little glass of sherry, maybe at night. And he would relate stories, particularly when you got him talking about his wartime experiences. They were fascinating.
Yeah. What do you think he would have made of the Assembly today?
Well, as I say, he really believed that the United Kingdom should be integrated. But I suppose deep down, he would have been happy that we largely have peace. And I think he would also, the last time, it's some years since I was talking to him, he hasn't been that well. You know, this argument that the union is now safe in unionist eyes, I think he'd be happy with that. I think, though, deep down, uncomfortable.
Well, Ken, thank you so much indeed for coming around and paying tribute to former friend and the Ulster, former Ulster Unionist Party leader, Jim Molyneux, who we've just heard has passed away at the age of 94. Ken, thank you very much.